Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts Jay
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes! Amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salah. Yeah, we love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're gonna make
How
me
are you
break.
Exposing me?
Because you're gonna make me break.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is episode 168, where we'll be taking you through all the action of Matchday 31. And by we, of course, I mean myself, Jake, as I will be alone this episode, as Matt is in Ibiza. Due to the fact that Matthew is in Ibiza, video will not be necessary for this episode, as his magnificent mullet will not be on display today. Matchday 31 saw quite a few crackers, and picking a goal of the week was quite a difficult task until Monday, of course, as Dan Endoy scored a fantastic goal against Napoli. It was like a backheel flip that went in off the crossbar. It was absolutely sensational. Some honorable mentions, of course, to Vojvoda versus Monza, Bernabe for his strike against Inter, Abraham for his goal against Fiorentina, Elmas's goal against Hellas Verona for a similar reason as to why Abraham's has been chosen as well. Both of them using teammates to 1-2, but pretty much orchestrated a solo goal over there. Locatelli versus Roma scored a lovely goal, and Anguissa against Bologna as well. His goal was a very nice effort. So yeah, massive shout out to Dan Endoy, who's having a fantastic season at Bologna. He's not the only one, of course. Everyone seems to be thriving in this Italiano system at the moment. Dan Endoy has started 22 games this season, has managed 8 goals and 3 assists. He's doing really, really well. In this episode, I'll be taking you through all the 10 games that took place in Matchday 31 in Serie A, starting off with Parma's immaculate comeback against Inter to draw 2-2. This result gave Napoli the opportunity to cut the deficit to just 1 point from leaders Inter. Of course, but they did face the tricky task of playing Bologna away from home on a Monday night. And that will be the second game we'll be discussing, actually. And that is Bologna's 1-1 draw to Napoli. So 3 points still separate Inter at the top from Napoli. Roma 1, Juve 1 will be the next game that I will be covering. That was a very good game, to be honest, and we got to see a little bit more of Tudor's style. Atalanta 0, Lazio 1 will follow suit. And this was yet another disappointing performance by La Dea, as Baroni's men managed to win a game against one of the top seven in Serie A, which has proven to be quite a difficult task for Lazio this season. Following that game, I will be discussing... Damn, I just want to say we all the time. You know, we. I. There's an I in team today. So yes, Milan 2, Fiorentina 2 will follow suit. Milan managed to come back from 2-0 down. It's pretty much a replay of what we saw last week. Lecce 1, Venezia 1 will follow suit, followed by Empoli 0, Cagliari 0. A very uneventful game, that one. Monza 1, Como 3, a game which saw Monza giving us hope that they would potentially do something in a game, but of course they didn't. Torino 1, Hellas Verona 1 will be the penultimate game. And then the last game I will be telling you about is Genoa 1, Udinese 0. Alright, but before I get cracking, of course, I'd like to give a shout out to our media partners, Benevobid. Their beautiful kits are not on display today, but you should check them out on Instagram and check out their website. They've got these lovely kits that are signed by some of your favorite legendary players in Filippo Inzaghi, Francesco Totti, even players who are doing well nowadays, like Retegi, for example. They just had a signed kit go up on auction a few days ago. You should totally check them out. That's Benevobid. And of course, as always, I would like to thank our beautiful patrons who never fail to keep me entertained in between games and during games, especially if I don't have the opportunity to watch a game. They keep me up to date through their witty remarks and mental breakdowns on the group chat. If you would like to become a patron and join this fantastic community, It's $3.99 a month, and the link is in our bio or in the description of wherever you are listening to this. We would like to give a warm welcome to Norbert, our latest patron, a Milan fan, another one, because we've been getting quite a few Atalanta fans lately, so it's nice to actually get another Milan fan to balance it out a little bit. And it's nice to see a local as well from Malta joining in the chat. It is also worth noting that our patrons all take part in a Serie A Fantasy League. The winner gets the opportunity to receive a free kit of their choice. At the moment, it's Joey D leading the charge with his team name Asane Titis Diao. He changes it every single week. We love reading it out over here. Asane Titis Diao is definitely a top fantasy football name. In second place, shout out to Alan, of course, Juve Merda over there. Tanino Batman Choco Loco in third, with Loco for the Choco, of course. And a special shout out to Luca Argento in fifth, because he recently told me that we always gloss over his team, probably because we have absolutely zero faith in Luca winning the Fantasy League. Luca, I'm sorry, you're close, but quite far still. Of course, his team name is I Don't Know What I'm Doing, and Luca, we believe you. All right, so I don't think I'm forgetting anything, so we can start with Parma 2, Inter 2. Now, Inter actually took a commanding lead in the first half at the Ennio Tardini. They took a 2-0 lead. However, the big chance of the game did fall to Boni just 9 minutes in, who failed to convert one-on-one after a big save by Sommer. And this will prove to be a theme this game, as Sommer pulled off save after save after save. Darmian's goal came in the 15th minute of a DiMarco cross, and we saw many Parma players get a touch here and there, but it just wasn't enough, and eventually Inter took advantage of a lapse in concentration from Parma to get this goal. And it's nice to see Darmian scoring, of course, as he's a veteran and he always seems to come up in these big moments. Thuram doubled the advantage in the 45th minute, and this was a bizarre goal. He totally mishit it, and this would have been an incredible goal had he meant it. But he totally mishit the ball and ended up chipping the keeper. And you can see one of the Parma players off the line trying to bicycle kick it off the line. And it only hits his own head and goes back in. But I think it had already crossed the line actually before that. But yeah, Thuram was almost embarrassed to celebrate that goal. And the camera panning to his father in the stands as he looked on in a disapproving way was top entertainment, to be honest with you. Parma did fight back in the second half. And they leveled the score with goals from Bernabe in the 60th minute. And this was a peach of a goal by Bernabe. Lovely hold-up play by Boni, who laid it off to Bernabe, who lasered it in from quite a distance. And then we had Ondrejka in the 69th minute. Nice. Who pretty much scored a solo goal with a few step-overs, shooting, took a deflection, and ended up in the back of the net, leaving Sommer rooted to the spot. There were quite a few late chances, including a missed opportunity by Pellegrino, who came in and caused many problems for Inter. But that miss at the end was quite bad, hitting the crossbar and right in front of the goalkeeper. But Inter ended up dropping points, and it was quite concerning for them, of course, with Napoli's opportunity to close the gap just a few days later. And of course, not knowing if they were going to manage to do so. Inter's first half was actually quite effective. They leveraged their left-hand side, which is something they always do. Bastoni initiated play. Mkhitaryan and Çalhanoğlu started together with Aslani as the regista. This game, they interchanged fluidly. And DiMarco created a lot of danger from that left side. Of course, Sommer was pivotal for them, making two top-tier saves to preserve their lead, because things could have got quite bad for them had he not saved those shots. In the second half, Inter's intensity did drop off, and I think Bastoni's injury and him having to be removed is proving to be a theme this season, because every time Inzaghi takes out Bastoni, Inter throw the game. And them managing three competitions is proving to be quite a lot for them. They shifted to a defensive setup, they invited pressure, and Parma revitalized their play through substitutions. They brought on Pellegrino, Leoni, and Bernabe. They exploited Inter's defensive approach with direct play. they let Inter attack and countered still. So they didn't just attack. They let Inter have the ball. They were very intelligent. They allowed Inter to open up a little bit and hit them on the counter attack. I thought that Parma played a very interesting game, a very good game, to be honest. And it was very nice as a Milan fan to see Kivu, who's an Inter legend, celebrating those goals so passionately on the Parma bench. Shout out to Parma goalkeeper, of course, Suzuki. Pulled off an amazing save on Lautaro as well. Went kind of unnoticed. I think this game was pretty much a copy and paste of what we saw against Udinese at the end of March. Just two games ago, of course. They allowed Udinese back into the game and were lucky to actually come away with a victory. As Sole managed to score a goal in the 71st minute. And after that, it was all Udinese just pressing. Inter, I think they give up way too much at the end of games, and I'm not sure if it's a matter of arrogance or of complacency, but yeah, there is definitely a psychological change at the end of the games, especially once you take out some of the heavy hitters like Bastoni and Çalhanoğlu. They really do struggle without them, and it'll be interesting to see how they manage to end the season, because I'm starting to wonder, maybe they'll give Napoli more opportunities to close the gap. I wouldn't bet on it, and I wouldn't bet on Napoli actually taking those opportunities, but at least we'll have a good ending to the season, an interesting one, right? That isn't as straightforward. But anyway, we would like to wish Inter the best of luck in their clash against Bayern Munich tonight. We, of course, are Milan fans over here at Serie A Spotlight. However, we like to keep a little bit of neutrality, and we always like to wish the best of luck to the Italian teams in Europe, as they are, of course, representing the league. So, you know, Bayern Munich smashing Inter wouldn't be a good look for Serie A, of course. So yes, the best of luck to Inter. Good luck. Go smash it. So 2 days after Inter's draw to Parma, Napoli walked out into the Renato Dall'Ara, hoping to cut the deficit to just 1 point. And Conte had quite a headache, because he had to deal with two absentees in Meret and Buongiorno. Of course, this saw Scuffet making his debut in goal for Napoli, and Juan Jesus having to step in to replace Buongiorno, of course, a very notable absentee, as Buongiorno has been a stellar player, one of the standout performers for Napoli this season. So Napoli did come out guns blazing and managed to get their goal just 18 minutes in, as Anguissa had a powerful solo run that saw him to be immovable, undroppable, untacklable by the entire Bologna defense. We saw Holm bouncing off him. We saw their defenders like Miranda trying to stop him, sliding into him. But of course, he was just immovable, and he ended up rounding the goalkeeper and tapping it in. And this would pretty much sum up Napoli's first half, as they came out absolutely guns blazing. They were extremely intense, and they didn't bother building up play. They would just hoof it up to Lukaku, route one. And in fact, that's where their goal came from. Lukaku's physicality and hold-up play caused many problems for them in the first half. Politano's runs stretched Bologna. Bologna were trying to opt for this man-marking system. There was Abisher on McTominay, Freuler on Anguissa, etc., etc. However, in the first half, this did falter, as Napoli were simply too intense. Ravaglia made a few saves to keep Bologna in it. And in the second half, Napoli would eventually tire out, as the situation would change completely. Italiano, of course, was missing Ferguson this game. Abisher stepped in instead of him, and he did struggle a little bit earlier, but ignited after halftime. In the second half, Bologna's rhythm and pace really did overwhelm Napoli's tiring defense. Castro's late introduction couldn't quite clinch the victory for them. However, in the 64th minute, Danandoy would score an incredible goal that was totally deserved for Bologna, as the second half was all them, you know. It's true, Napoli did kind of dominate the first half. However, Bologna were still alive and in it, and they still had their chances in the first half. In the second half, however, there was this massive drop-off from Napoli. And it could be a fitness thing, to be honest. Because they played with so much intensity in the first half that it's always difficult to replicate that in the second. And Bologna came out guns blazing, and they really, really stressed Napoli out, to be honest. And by the end of it, I was sure Bologna were going to score another goal, but Napoli held firm and it's 3 points separating them from Inter right now. Napoli's running in the league is quite forgiving in theory. However, there are many teams who play a low block, so that's quite challenging for Napoli, as they do tend to struggle to break down these low blocks. They've got Empoli, Monza, Torino, Lecce, Genoa, Parma and Cagliari. Safe to say that most of these teams will sit back and cause quite a few problems. But, you know, the ball is in their court right now to get as many wins as possible. They've only got these games to think about. Perhaps they need to manage their workload and not to give everything in the first half. Save something for the second half and to really think of some solutions off the bench. I liked the way Raspadori was working in a two up top system. I thought that Okafor looked lively when he came on a few times. I think he's having fitness issues right now or injury issues, because we really haven't seen much of him at all. Yeah, and it's nice to see that they have McTominay, Lobotka, Anguissa and Gilmore all fighting for a spot. Of course, if you're playing against a low block team, maybe starting Lobotka and Gilmore together can help you to move that ball around a little bit more quickly. Yeah, when it comes to Inter, of course, they do have three competitions that they're taking part in, and their league running is tougher than Napoli's, actually, because they do have to play the likes of Roma, Verona, Torino, Lazio, and Como. So, yeah, not to mention that they've got games against Bayern, Bologna, and Milan in between. So yeah, quite a tough running for Inter. I think both teams right now kind of have a similar issue, funnily enough. It's finishing out games, you know. It's maintaining the same level throughout the game. So yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch. Bologna, on the other hand, right now have a real claim to fame, man. They're doing really well. They deserve to be where they are. Prior to this draw, they had 6 victories in a row, and they are currently in 4th, just 1 point above Juventus and 1 point below Atalanta. I think at this rate, they're probably favourites to finish 3rd in this season's league campaign. Their run-in is not the easiest, however, they have proven to be a side that relishes the big games and the big moments, and they've got players who are in constant rotation, who are all performing at a very high level. And yeah, I think they can definitely do it. I think we'll see them again in Champions League next season, and hopefully they'll have a better run in that competition as well, because they deserve it. They're a fantastic team. Also, before we move on, what the hell is on the back of Odegaard's neck? Is that like from those cup massage things? Like, what the hell? I even saw some Napoli players, like Ngonge, flock around him at the end of the game and talk to him about it, because that's a really weird-looking thing. And he's had it for a while now. It's 2 weeks of that massive red mark. It's like a massive animal took a chunk out of his neck or something. What the fuck? It is also worth mentioning, because I forgot to mention it, that, of course, Conte was absent for this game. He was unavailable because of suspension, of course. Skorupski went off injured and was replaced by Ravalia in the 25th minute. Yeah, and Castro's miss at the end was quite a big one as well. It was a rebound off a save, and it took instinct more than anything else. You know, you can't really blame him for it. The goalkeeper saved it, and it fell right in his path. He reacted, but of course he got it off target. Very unlucky, but it doesn't look good, right? The ending was very dramatic, of course. Raspadori had a free kick as well for Napoli in the dying moments, and he shot it into the wall, went for the rebound, which was quite a weak attempt. However, Ravalia spilled it into the path of Rahmani, who kind of, I think, was torn between shooting and crossing, so did something in between. That was a massive moment for Napoli as well, to actually leave with 3 points, despite being pegged back in the second half. So yeah, I think we can move on to Roma 1, Juventus 1. Now, Tudor had a full team at his disposal, pretty much, apart from the likes of Milik, Perin and Federico Gatti. He set up in a 3-4-2-1 system with Kalulu, Vega and Kelly at the back, with Gonzalez and Yildiz supporting Vlahovic up front. It seems like Juve are working within their squad. potentially in preparation for next season. And that's the only reason I can see as to why Vlahovic is being preferred to Kolomwani, to be honest with you, because his performances on the pitch haven't been great, despite working very hard and despite Igor Tudor's words of praise for him, he simply hasn't lived up to his price tag. Ranieri set up in a 3-4-2-1 formation. Of course, they are missing Dybala. He's out for the rest of the season. Pellegrini was out as well. Abdul Hamid and Rensch were also injured, with Salamakers suspended. That would prove to be a big miss for Roma. Of course, Salamakers is a great player. He's been playing very well, be it at Milan, Roma, Bologna. You know, he always puts in one hell of a shift as a player. Perhaps, yes, he does have his limitations, but I think that he is a player who is very useful to have on the pitch. This game saw this weird phenomenon of many teams only playing one half in Serie A. The season continue, pretty much. The main culprits of this bizarre phenomenon are Milan, who only play in the second half, right? Juve, who only play in the first half. Napoli, who only play in the first half. Inter, who only play for the first 60 minutes. This is proving to be a bit of a theme, these weird collective drop-offs in games. And this game proved to be no different, as Juve came out very well. They were vertical, they were direct, they caused many problems for Roma, and eventually they got their goal thanks to a wonder strike from Locatelli. In the second half, an error by Juve would result in a Roma corner, with which they saw Shomorodov equalize for them in the 49th minute. And after that, to be honest with you, Juve didn't really look like they were going to get back into the game. So it seems to be a recurring theme, right? These big misses in the first half, the failure to capitalize on your big chances in the first half come to bite you in the ass in the second half, of course. Nico Gonzalez had this fantastic header. We know, of course, how good he can be in the air. That was saved onto the post. That could have been a game changer had that gone in. No shit. Shout out to Miles Villar, who never fails to impress. What a keeper. Ranieri deserves a massive shout out, as he's continued to prove that he is a manager who is still very much capable of delivering at this level. He took out Hummels in the second half and brought on Eldor Shomorodov, who scored just 8 minutes after being on the pitch. It's also worth noting that Hummels has announced his retirement from club football at the end of this season. One of the most interesting performances this game was of Pierre Kalulu, who had a very good performance, which was almost flawless. However, he was at fault for Roma's goal. Granted, there was absolutely no one marking Shomorodov, but it did feel like Kalulu was the person who was meant to be tracking him. However, yes, we have to be fair and say that Kalulu had a pretty great performance. Apart from that, he had one clearance from a Cristante shot that was sensational, to be honest. What a clearance coming out of nowhere, sliding in the air and just kicking the ball away. Lloyd Kelly is also a different person in a three at the back formation. He plays much better, and it's, I think, way better suited to his skill set. He doesn't stand out like a sore thumb like he did under Motta in a four at the back system. So yes, I think this formation does benefit Kelly a lot, and many of the defenders, to be honest, at Juve, and offers them that little bit of extra protection that they need, especially after being so low on confidence after the end of that Motta era. I'm curious to hear also, who would you guys rather have on your team, Kone or Thuram? Because they were like two tireless machines in midfield. What a battle that was. Kefrem is so technical. He's so technically gifted. He can dribble. You know, I think he completed the most dribbles this game in that Juve midfield. And he wins the ball back. He's constantly up and down. He's tireless. He's sensational. And then Kone is also blessed with the same kind of technique and intelligence and strength that Thuram has. So, yeah, I'm curious to know who you guys prefer, because they're two very good midfielders. It's also interesting to see Ranieri utilizing the same system he used at Cagliari. You know, it's absolutely bizarre how it translated so well in this Roma team. Just goes to show, right? It looked good at Cagliari, but with even better players, obviously, it looks even better. And the one thing that's that team has in common with this one is Eldor Shomorodov, who he, of course, decided to keep and was very vocally against selling during the transfer market. Now, despite only starting 5 games for Roma this season, Shomorodov is on 3 goals and 2 assists. And most of these are from the bench, you know, so he's made a massive impact in turning games around the season. So, yeah, maybe a low-key fan favorite over here, some unsung hero popping up out of the shadows for Roma. Definitely seems to be the case. So this draw was a decent start to Roma's horrible run-in right now. They've got Lazio next in the derby, then Verona, Inter, Fiorentina, Atalanta, Milan and Torino. That's how they'll end the season. Of course, Ranieri will be trying to motivate his men to do what they can to finish as close to the top four as possible, if not in the top four. Because Atalanta have dropped so many points and their form has been so abysmal, there are actually 2 Champions League spots that are up for grabs pretty much. You can't really guarantee Champions League for Atalanta, judging by the way they've been playing. So, yeah, the likes of Juve, Lazio, Roma, and potentially even Fiorentina will definitely be interested in those spots and will do their utmost to get them. This is going to make one hell of an ending to the season, guys. For those of you who do not know, Fiorentina in 8th are just 5 points off of Bologna in 4th. Yeah. Safe to say that the top 4 race in Serie A this season is tighter than Cristiano Ronaldo's man bun at Juventus. So yeah, we can move on to Atalanta, who hosted Lazio and lost 1-0 with Gustav Isaksson scoring the decisive goal in the 54th minute shortly after coming on. Atalanta, despite a strong chance early in the second half, couldn't find the net, extending their winless run at home to 7 games and marking their 3rd consecutive loss. Lazio's win, of course, bolsters their Champions League hopes, and they were in desperate need for a victory of this nature, as their top 4 hopes were kind of depleting, right, judging by the form of those around them and the inability to actually challenge and beat the teams that are above them. Gasperini stuck with a 3-4-2-1 this game. He deployed Cuadrado off the shoulder of Retegui on the right side in a 3-4-2-1 system, kind of like in that trequartista position. Definitely interesting to see. I guess the idea would be to try to contain Tavares. I don't know. Meanwhile, Baroni used Mandas, Chauna and Belayan from the start for pretty much the first time, I think, this season that Belayan has started, for sure. Chauna, I think, has started the season, but he hasn't been great, to be honest with you. He's been quite poor when it comes to his decision-making and quite clumsy at times with the ball. The rotation could also be maybe Baroni keeping an eye on upcoming fixtures in the Europa League as well, as Lazio will be hoping to win that. I must say that I've been very impressed by goalkeeper Mandas, who, in my opinion, has performed better than Provedel has this season, and he got the hockey assist on Isaksson's goal, going Ruth 1 over the top with a long ball that was very, very precise. And that's meant to be one of Provedel's strengths, right, his distribution. But Mandas is definitely capable of playing long balls in the same way, if not better, to be honest. Interesting to mention as well that Tavares did get injured and was replaced by Pellegrini, so his poor spell continues, Tavares. He started off the season really well with 8 assists, you know, just back-to-back-to-back-to-back assists. But he seems to have slowed down and is struggling with fitness issues right now. Injury issues rather than fitness, more than anything. I was very impressed by Dele Bashiru, who was winning most of those duels up there. And he actually got the knockdown on Mandas' long ball for Isaksson. Not to mention that he did have a pretty good time against Hien as well, who is all over you. You know, Hien is very difficult to play against, probably the most invasive defender in Serie A. And he coped really well with him, so definitely a very useful tool for Lazio. So while Baroni's half-time tweak, bringing on Isaksson for Chauna, sparked their attack, Gasperini's tweak made Atalanta worse. Now, this is a substitution that I cannot understand. He makes this change pretty much every game lately. He takes out Retegui and Lookman, or granted, let's forget Lookman for now. He takes out Retegi, right? And he brings on very creative players, the likes of Samardzic, De Ketelaere, and Maldini. So what happens is Zappacosta and Bellanova end up playing and linking up with these players, and the crosses end up going into the box with no one to target, no one to head them in. And that's exactly what happened. The second they took Retegi out, you can tell that Atalanta weren't going to score. You know, if you're going to go for the crossing route, the crossing system, you need a target man. If you don't have a target man on the bench, then you need to change your approach. I don't know why you're taking Retegi out and crossing non-stop. It doesn't make any sense. And it's probably the reason why Atalanta have failed to score in the last three games. Yeah, that's three games in a row without a single goal scored for Atalanta. And they were, of course, against the likes of Inter, Fiorentina and Lazio. And this came right after a 4-0 thumping of Juventus. So they do need to get their shit together because their Champions League spot is in jeopardy. And I really can't... I have this feeling that Gasperini and the squad kind of have already mentally moved on. They've already mentally checked out of the season. It doesn't make any sense because they're well within their objectives. But these performances on the pitch just seem so uninspired to me. And like Lookman as well. Lookman was a talisman of this team. He was everything. He was playing so well, carrying the team on his shoulders and providing that spark. You know, Atalanta have a good system where they just, you know, if you play to the system, you will get goals. However, Lookman was always that spark that could create something out of nothing. And it seems like, I don't know, it's a little bit lethargic. It's a bit indifferent nowadays. If you look at how Atalanta have performed in 2025, it's 5 wins, 6 draws and 9 losses. Yeah, a massive decline from what we're used to. Of course, to be fair, they have had their fair share of injuries. Retegi is meant to have Scamacca in rotation with him for this exact reason, because you can't expect a striker to be on form throughout the whole season. Retegi hit the ground running this year, and since Scamacca's injury, he's been banging them in. But now, since his most recent injury, he's kind of dropped off a little bit, and there's no one really to take that pressure off his shoulders. However, Gasperini used to always deploy Lookman as a false nine with Samardzic and CDK, for example, to kind of, you know, create this atypical attacking trident. And that's not really been utilized. And I feel like in some of these games, it might be smarter to start off with an atypical front three and then bring in Retegi when you need the goals later on. You know? Because at the end of the game, if you need a goal, you're going to be piling crosses into the box. And that's when you really need your target man. And you can try something cuter in the first half. But sometimes you just have to go direct, man. You need to cross it in. And that's what they always end up doing with no target man in the box. And it's just bizarre to me. On the other hand, you have Baroni, who pretty much managed to get a win here with a very depleted squad. You know, Castellanos was still out. Romagnoli was sick. He called in sick for this game. Romagnoli had a fever. So Gigot had to start. And then Gigot got injured. He got a slight knock. So Provstgaard had to come in for the first time since arriving. And he was decent, to be honest. He played a very good game. Isaksson came on for Chauna and reignited the attack and scored another important goal. That's, I think, the third game changer this season after the goal against Victoria Pilsen and Napoli. And now this one, so he doesn't score many goals, Isaksson, but they're usually big goals, you know. Bellion was deployed from the get-go as Guendouzi was suspended, and he had a pretty good game as well. Very good at moving the ball around, very technical in the middle, very quick. I liked this team, to be honest with you. And I love Dele Bashiru playing off the shoulder of Dia, of course. Yeah, absolutely love that. It's important to mention as well, I think that Zaccagni has had a bit of a drop-off when it comes to his contribution, at least. However, I think that he still does a decent job on the pitch. So yeah, massive win for Lazio, taking them up to 6th, just 2 points off of that 4th spot. Now, unfortunately for me, I need to talk about Milan. They hosted Fiorentina, and that match ended 2-2. There was a lot of early chaos and late drama, as usual, when it comes to Milan. Fiorentina raced to a 2-0 lead within 10 minutes via an own goal from Malik Chau, which saw Musa just playing the ball clumsily and losing it in midfield. He didn't even play the ball, he just surrendered it. he had the ball and he stopped dribbling and kind of pointed at it for a teammate to go and claim it. Nice as you can say, so subbing him off shortly after that, because absolutely unacceptable, and these brain dead moments are really costing Milan many points this season, have costed Milan many points this season, and to be honest, have pretty much ended Milan's season in the league and in the Champions League, let's just say that, because the Coppa Italia is very much alive there. Milan did fight back, thankfully, after Abraham scored a splendid goal, to be honest. He kind of set the whole thing up himself by dribbling and playing a 1-2 and finishing very neatly. And then it would be Jovic who scored and equalized in the second half. Dodo would go on and make it 3-2. However, that goal was ruled out for offside, leaving both teams with 1 point each, sharing the spoils. Palladino and Fiorentina exploited Milan's defense early on with quick transitions. They played very... they stretched Milan's team, playing very wide, overwhelming Milan's backline. You know, they have many players who are capable of showing up in these moments, like Goodmanson and Keane. You know, Goodmanson forcing Chao into that own goal and then Keane scoring from Dodo's accurate delivery. I think that Fiorentina have many weapons, and there's a reason why they do so well in these big games, in contrast to Lazio, right? Yeah, I think Mandragora and Fagioli dictated the tempo well, and they really punished Milan in the first half. However, in the second half, Milan decided to play, quite frankly. I have no logical explanation as to why Milan takes so long to click into gear. From what I can see, the defense has very little coverage. And it doesn't help when your players are constantly giving the ball away and playing against you, quite frankly. But yeah, I do think that Milan need to either put more bodies in the middle over there, because a double pivot isn't quite doing it. And I do think that Warren Bondo should be played from the get-go, because I like the profile of Bondo, and I think he can offer you a lot defensively. Whereas Musa, granted, he runs a lot, but he's not really, you know, winning the ball back very often, and he makes too many mistakes, I think, to be a guaranteed staple in that Milan midfield. Fofana as well isn't really that player. He's not really a crusher. He's more of a creative player more than anything else. I'd also like to take a moment to talk about Luka Jovic, who scored his second goal of the season in back-to-back games. I'm not quite sure why Jovic has fallen so out of favour at Milan, where, to be honest, he is probably the smartest striker Milan have. Take nothing away from Tammy Abraham. I think he's very intelligent. However, Jovic is actually more clinical than Abraham. I think a 4-4-2 with Jovic and Abraham up top together would really change the dynamic of this team. Because quite often it's the decision-making that's messing Milan up this season. And I think if you play with two smart strikers who can link up very well and who can really kind of empower the players around them, then you'll have a different Milan. I think that Jovic is a very smart player. He came on and caused lots of problems. He played many intelligent balls, and he linked up with many of his teammates effectively. I do think that this is the way forward for Milan. Perhaps a 4-4-2, flat 4-4-2, with Jovic and Abraham starting together up top, and maybe Pulisic and Leao out wide, kind of like a 4-2-2-2 kind of thing. Yeah, we'll see what Conceição does, but Jovic has proven to be probably more deployable than Jimenez, who was subbed in and out of this game, by the way. Yeah. Before we move on, I would like to give a shout out to Manian and De Gea, who both had very good performances this game. You see, Manian, he had a grand total of 7 saves, and many of them were high quality saves as well. This was Manian at his best, to be honest with you. While De Gea had 4 very good saves as well. So massive for those two goalkeepers. Another important thing to mention about Milan is, while everything seems dire and everything seems dull at the moment and hopeless, it is worth mentioning that no other team in Serie A has come back as many times from a losing position to get points as Milan this season, which means that there is something of a base, of a foundation. The talent is clearly there, and Milan are a team that has been built to win, to challenge for titles. So I do think that for whoever is going to be at Milan next season, be it the myriad coaches that have been linked to the club on social media, like Allegri, De Zerbi, whoever the hell, everyone and their dog has been linked to Milan. But I do think they're going to find a team that is pretty much ready to go. Hopefully, I just hope that the right manager is picked and that manager is given the tools necessary to deploy his style, because the players that are currently at Milan are definitely effective, but you know, you need to empower the coach. You need to give the coach the players he needs to perform at his best, to really manifest his system on the pitch, his ideology. One thing I forgot to mention is that Paladino did get sent off this game, so he will not be present for Fiorentina's next match. However useful you think or important you think that might be. And now we can move on to the relegation battle before we get into the mid-table games, which have been a little bit dull lately. But the relegation battle is obviously very important, despite the amount of draws we've seen. Teams are getting really scared, to be honest, of dropping points, and they're prioritizing not losing more than anything else. But they need to start winning. Some of these teams need to start winning. These draws aren't going to be enough, and it's really going to go down to the wire. Lecce hosted Venezia, and that ended in a 1-1 draw. Venezia took the lead in the 50th minute through an own goal by Gallo, forced from a free kick, and Bascherotto equalized with a header in the second half. Despite late chances, most notably Indri hitting the post for Lecce, the scoreline held. Lecce moved to +3 above the relegation zone, while Venezia remained second bottom, 5 points adrift of Lecce. So this was indeed a six-pointer where the spoils were shared. Lecce, of course, were managed by the former Milan manager Gianpaolo, relied on Krstović as the lone striker up front, flanked by Pierotti and Morente. And we can also notice that Rebic hasn't really cemented his place in this team, which is quite sad, to be honest, because Rebic is a very fun player to watch. Helgeson was playing in between Pierotti and Morente, pulling the strings. This early aggression created a lot of chances, this aggressive front three, but they lacked precision. Venezia, who are of course managed by Di Francesco, countered with Yeboah and Gitkier as the front two, aiming to exploit transitions more than anything else. The first half was cagey, and it saw zero big chances created by each team, despite 17 shots being taken. There was only one goalkeeping save for each team in the first half. The second half is where things opened up, as Venezia grew into the game after halftime, thanks to the introduction of Haps, who made Venezia look a lot more dynamic. Zerbin's set-piece delivery forced Gallo into his error, exposing Lecce's ongoing vulnerability from dead balls this season. Gianpaolo would then go on to perform a triple substitution, bringing on Indri, Pierret and Berisha, and it shifted momentum. Bascherotto's header from Helgeson's corner punished Venezia's lapse in concentration, as Bascherotto got his first goal of the season. Late on, Lecce played very directly. This saw Krstović feeding Indri. They tested Radu, while Fila squandered a golden opportunity from Berisha's mistake, highlighting, to be honest, Venezia's inability to actually win a game, because this was a gift for Fila and he should have done much better as a striker. You know, come on, like, you're a striker, you're meant to be begging for those moments. Those are the moments you're meant to be waiting for to impress, you know, with a new striker at a team like Venezia. Save your team. Yeah, so I thought that Venezia played really well. It was a very noble attempt once again. Of course, Nicolussi Cavalier was absolutely spectacular. He's so much fun to watch. But they just lack that finishing edge, you know, which hopefully they manage to get some. Not some, hopefully they manage to get a victory, you know. They need it more than anything else. But I must admit, I was personally happy with the draw, as Lecce and Venezia are two teams I would like to stay in Serie A. Of course, Lecce being one of the only teams from the south in Serie A. However, as we discovered in our last episode, they do have a killer run-in coming up, Lecce. It's brutal, it's super unforgiving. It's Juventus, Como, Atalanta, Napoli, Verona, Torino, Lazio. That is absolutely brutal. While Venezia have Monza, Empoli, Milan, Torino, Fiorentina, Cagliari, and Juve. A little bit more forgiving. Not the easiest running. But I think this next game against Monza, they have to win it. They can't draw that. If they don't win that game, they deserve to go down. Empoli hosted Cagliari, and that game ended in a 0-0 stalemate. Empoli, who are winless since December, failed to capitalize on Lecce's earlier draw, remaining 1 point behind them and missing a chance to climb out of this relegation scrap. Cagliari's resolute defending earned them a point, moving them up to 30 points and keeping a 6-point buffer above the drop zone, really highlighting Davide Nicola's great work this season. So Daversa's Empoli started with intent. They pushed Henderson and Cacace forward but lacked ruthlessness. Cacace had some poor decision-making one-on-one, while Yerimina was absolutely molesting those Empoli strikers. He was a beast this game, and they couldn't do anything with him over there. He was a real menace, to be honest. And there was a point I felt really bad for Esposito, because he was getting genuinely bullied by Yerimina. Luvumbo got the start this game for Cagliari, but struggled to spark any counters against Gogliocidze, who had a pretty strong game. The first half was very scrappy, and Cagliari were content to absorb the pressure, and this would be a theme, right? This was more of a must-not-lose for Cagliari, as they've got a bit of distance between themselves and the drop zone. Empoli are now 16 games without a win in Serie A. Their last victory in Serie A coming on the 8th of December 2024 against Verona, and they won that one 4-1 away from home. Since then, it's been losses and draws only. Apart from a Coppa Italia victory, of course, against Juve. No wonder they're in 18th with 24 points. You know, they've really dipped, Empoli. And they really have to start doing better, man. They really have to figure out how to score goals. They really have to figure out how to make the most out of the players they have. They've got useful attacking options in Esposito, Colombo, and Kwame. I think Daversa has put together a team that is quite tricky to beat at times, and that can cause problems for some teams. They're not a team that concedes a lot of goals. However, they do struggle to score, and I think maybe something needs to be sacrificed in this system to kind of allow more offensive players to get the start. Big shout out to Marianucci at the back for Empoli, who is having quite the breakout season. Just 20 years old, he played in that game against Juve in the Coppa Italia victory, was one of the youngsters who was given the start that game, and he's really impressed me this season, to be honest with you. But anyway, we can move on to Monza 1, Como 3. This is a game where Como staged a very convincing comeback over Monza at the U-Power Stadium, and it was Danny Motta who scored early on, just 5 minutes in, to give Monza hope. And the vibes were spectacular. The sun was shining. The fans were on it. Monza pulled out his clown celebration. The vibes were immaculate, but the party would soon be spoiled by Como, who responded with Jorko Ikone's goal in the 16th minute, Diaw in the 39th, and Vojvoda in the 49th. Each goal just getting better and better. Vojvoda's goal was so good that he ran off in celebration, and you could hear him laughing while celebrating, because he couldn't believe the shot that he was, first of all, that he was given enough space to take, and second of all, the fact that it ricocheted off the crossbar and into the back of the net. Great goal. So this result pushed Como 10 points clear of relegation, while Monza edged closer to mathematical relegation after a brief glimmer of resistance. Interesting to see Galliani walking out at halftime over there. But these are the consequences of your own decisions, right, Galliani? But anyway, if you want to get into the tactics, you know, Monza played the 3-5-2. There was Mota and Keita paired up top. Akpro was in midfield. He kept the things going, or tried to at least. Kempf was the reason they scored early. He made a mistake. But Como overall, we're just much better, right? They played a 4-2-3-1 with four attackers in that team, and Ikone, Paz, Diaw, and Duvikas up front. They absorbed that early blow from Monza and then just grew into the game and blew them out of the water. Monza's defending made it a little bit easier for them, particularly Pereira's blunder, which saw him teeing up the ball perfectly for Como's striker. So our weekly bye-bye to Monza, as Matthew would say. Bye-bye. Torino played against Hellas Verona and this had draw written all over it. If you didn't bet on this game, you are a fool, because it was clear from the get-go that this would end in a draw. Verona took the lead in the 64th minute after a blunder by Vanya Milinkovic-Savic, who mishandled a back pass and gifted Sar a goal. And by mishandled a back pass, I mean he got the ball, controlled it well, but just didn't seem to realize how hard Sar was pressing him. This is Vanya's second lapse in concentration, two games in a row. You know, it's quite unlike him. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know, he actually does have one foot on the beach already, considering Torino don't really have anything to play for. However, Elmas would equalize 3 minutes later with a fantastic goal, touching and going with a teammate, you know, and finishing perfectly off the post. Montepo pulled off an excellent save on Shea Adams on a penalty, and Samuele Ricci would go on to get a red card in the 86th minute. Hellas Verona would go on to celebrate this draw more than Torino would, of course, as they are now on 31 points, while Torino are on 40. You know, as we often joke this on this podcast, Torino are the team that finishes the season quite early on. Them and Udinese, usually, right? They're on the beach before everyone else. This takes us to the last game. Genoa 1, Udinese 0. This is thanks to Zanoli's late strike in the 77th minute, which proved to be decisive. Lorenzo Lucca squandered a golden opportunity early in the second half, and this is probably my fault, as I used to constantly bang the drum that Lucca does not miss big chances. This was quite the miss. In fact, I do not recommend watching it, because it might affect your opinion on him, and I've been sent on this planet to protect Lorenzo Lucca's reputation, and I'm slowly manifesting him into that Milan squad, so I'm doing God's work over here, guys. This was Genoa's fifth win in six home games in 2025. So under Patrick Vieira, they've been doing really well, man. They've really changed their season. They've turned it around. And it's actually proven to be a massive upgrade from Gilardino, who Matt and I are convinced is a good manager. But we're very impressed with what Vieira has done. And he's obviously clearly enjoying that Pesto Genovese by the looks of him, because he's growing an inch every week, I think. So, Genoa's relentless wing play and midfield control overwhelmed Udinese, who were quite lackluster this game. Zanoli's goal rewarded their persistence, because they had been knocking for a while prior to that. Udinese's sporadic intensity and Lucca's wastefulness pretty much led to them not getting anything out of this game. It was a clear decline in the performance, far from the heroics they pulled off against Inter. Rui Modesto would go on to equalize in the second half at the end. However, Lucca was in an offside position, not his best game, and VAR did catch him over there and they cancelled the goal. Also, shout out to Ekuban, who was being booed last season, but this year he's really become a catalyst for changing games for Genoa, being brought on and just providing that, you know, directness in attack, that energy of the bench. He's been really good. In a world of chaos, one man posts, and luckily for you, the people listening are your hosts. Wisdom with the wank, he writes online. Let's fucking go. Welcome back to the second edition of our segment Wisdom with the Wank, where we take a look at Simi in Wankwo's Instagram account and snipe quotes from that and analyze them, because he's always sharing wisdom on his Instagram account. And I'm really missing Matthew on this one, who hasn't heard the song, by the way, that I generated through AI. I hope you guys enjoy that. It's a fun little banger over there. And to be honest, I couldn't stop laughing the first time I heard it. But yeah, on a serious note, wisdom with the wank. So for today's quote, we have character is power, so know exactly what you dish out to the world. That's very, very profound, to be honest. Who you are when no one's watching is the real you. This is, you are not your bank balance, you are not a six-pack, you are not a follower count. Your character is who you really are when no one is watching. That's the important thing, right? Since your character is constantly being expressed in how you act, speak, post, and probably tweet when you're half asleep, you should pay attention to what you're putting out into the world. Thank you, Simi. Fantastic, fantastic quote, as always. Character is power, so know exactly what you dish out into the world.
If you like Syria or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.